This is a coastal story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. Not many people can stand on the seafront at Rhyl in February and feel excitement at what lies before them. Not many people can stand on the seafront at Rhyl in February and feel anything much, to be honest, at least not in their extremities. But there weren't many people like George Garrett. When he stood looking out at the waves on the chilly evening of February the 24th, 1880, the 28-year-old felt that spread before him was the whole world, rather than a dark, choppy and freezing cold patch of the Irish Sea. There'd been delays, frustrations and frustrating delays, but finally he was about to set out on the second leg of a remarkable voyage that would change the maritime world forever. It was a voyage made by submarine. The son of an evangelical Irish curate, George had grown up in Moss Side in Manchester, studying chemistry, then working briefly as a schoolteacher, with a nice sideline in bare-knuckle prize fighting. While at college, he'd devised a breathing apparatus using caustic potash to extract carbon dioxide from the air, unknowingly doing untold damage to his lungs in the process. In 1871, at the age of 19, George Garrett enrolled at Trinity College, Dublin, from where he graduated 4 years later with a degree in experimental sciences, married a woman from Waterford, returned to Manchester, took a theology qualification, and in 1877 became a curate at the church of his father. Yet science remained an itch he just couldn't scratch. The Russo-Turkish War that broke out as George began his religious career sent waves of fear throughout Europe, not least as steam power had made naval warfare a potent business. George Garrett set his scientific mind to military thinking and sketched a design for a one-man submersible vessel capable of placing and even removing mines from the hull of a ship. He worked quickly, securing a patent while building his first Garrett torpedo boat. 14 feet long and 5 feet across, it was made of iron 1/4 inch thick, was pointed at each end and had a tower 18 inches high at the centre with a porthole for the operator to see where they were going. And this is the best bit, a hole on each side to which the arms of a rubber diving suit were fixed, enabling the submariner to attach or remove mines or just wave at lobsters. It was powered by a propeller attached to treadles worked by the operator, whose breathing apparatus was described as a knapsack containing chemicals worn on the back, from which a tube protrudes, which feeds into the operator's mouth, the air being kept pure by the chemicals. Which sounds safe. Garrett made 2 test dives of 1 hour each that day, during which he descended more than 20 feet into the dock, keeping in touch with the surface via a tube telephone device. The experiment was a success, and George got more ambitious. In December 1879, he unveiled a much larger vessel, similar in design, pointed at both ends, but this one was 44 feet long, 9 feet across, and weighed nearly 40 tons. A bit large for pedal power, the vessel, which George called Resurgam, meaning I will rise, was powered by a fireless steam engine that made conditions on board almost unbearably hot. The only sign the crew of 3 had that oxygen was getting short and they needed to surface, and fast, was when the candles that lit the vessel guttered and died. Ridiculously dangerous though it sounds, tests proved successful enough to interest the Admiralty, who invited George and the machine to Portsmouth for a demonstration. If they liked it enough, there was 60 grand in it for its inventor. Coming from a family that was perennially skint thanks to his father's ill-advised business ventures, this was a life-changing opportunity for George and the Garretts. Instead of taking the Resurgam south by road, George decided to sail it from Birkenhead to Portsmouth. It was a good opportunity to test the vessel, and the voyage would be terrific publicity. Hence, on the 10th of December 1879, the Resurgam left Birkenhead, attached by a tow line to the steam yacht Elphin. Here's George's account of the first leg of the voyage in his own words. Our crew consisted of myself, Captain Jackson, Master Mariner, and Mr. George Price as engineer, and left the Alfred Dock, Birkenhead, on Wednesday night, the 10th of December, about 9 o'clock. The night was very dark and a little misty, which made it necessary for to proceed cautiously down the river until clear of the shipping. However, we reached the Rock Lighthouse without accident of any sort, and entered the Rock Channel about 10 o'clock. When we started, Captain Jackson remained outside on the lookout, whilst I took the helm in the conning tower. We passed down the Rock Channel, and safely making Spencer's Spit, we turned into the Horse Channel, which we cleared in due course, and were then fairly at sea. We laid our course for the Northwest Lightship and went very slow, intending to make some experiments in Victoria Deep as soon as daylight should come. When the morning of Thursday came, there was a very thick fog, which prevented our making the experiments we wished and necessitated our proceeding very carefully. The fog did not lift all day, so we moved about testing various parts of our internal machinery until the next morning. The sun rose beautifully on that Friday morning, and the weather being clear, we were able to make progress with our experiments. We had now been at sea about 38 hours, a great part of which we were under water, and felt desirous of making some port, as sleeping on board the Resurgam is not attended with such comfort as one might desire. At this time we found the Northwest Lightship close at hand, bearing about north, so determined to put into the River Clwyd, as there is a good anchorage there, and she will dry every tide, which is very convenient, as we are going to make a series of experiments with various propellers. The boat answered splendidly. The seas pass easily over her and cause hardly any motion, nor did they interfere in any important degree with her way or steering. The three of us landed at Rhyl in perfect health, if rather tired and dirty. However, after a good wash and a hot dinner, our comfort was entirely restored, and we could congratulate ourselves in having passed successfully through as novel and interesting a trip any sailors would wish to experience. We remain at Rhyl for a few days to perfect a few little matters of some importance to our future comfort. That few days turned into 10 weeks of repairs and modifications, until, at last, at 10 p.m. on the 24th of February 1880, Resurgam put to sea again, towed behind the Elphin. Bad weather soon closed in, and off Great Orme's Head the Elphin suffered engine trouble. The yacht's skipper sent a boat back to the submarine and asked George and his colleagues to assist with the bilges while he tried to restart the engine. The storm only worsened as the night went on, until at 10 o'clock the next morning the tow hawser snapped, and the Resurgam was cast adrift at the mercy of the storm. George watched in horror as his beloved vessel pitched and tossed, the hatch clanging open, waves breaking over it until the Resurgam took on water, was swamped, and sank to the bottom of the Irish Sea. Things didn't get much better for George. When the Elfin moored and the men went ashore, the yacht slipped its anchor in high winds and also ended up at the bottom of the sea. All those dreams, all those hopes, all that cash, all lost in the space of a few short hours off the coast of North Wales. George had recovered enough by 1882 to travel to Sweden to work on further submarine craft of similar design for the Nordenfelt Submarine Torpedo Boat Company. Russia agreed to take one of the vessels on a sail-or-return basis, but that one too was wrecked in a storm off the coast of Denmark. By 1890, he'd had enough of the submarine business and moved to Florida to be a farmer. When that turned out to be a disaster that cost him his life savings, he moved to New York and worked as a fireman before joining the US Army and fighting in the Spanish-American War of 1898. He contracted tuberculosis in lungs already weakened by his early experiments with breathing apparatus and died in New York City in 1902 at the age of 49. George Garrett was not a failure. His pioneering work was built on by others, and viable submarine warships were in operation a decade after his death. But life, luck, and a single storm had battered George Garrett's dreams into the silt at the bottom of a sea of hope. That cold February night, though, on the seafront at Rhyl, looking out past the white caps of the waves to the dark sea beyond, a sea whose final mysteries he was on the point of conquering. Imagine how that felt. Imagine the surges of hope coursing through him, even as, somewhere, out in the dark beyond the horizon, a storm was already building that would send George's vessel to the bottom of the sea, packed full of his dreams. That was A Coastal Story, and I'm Charlie Connolly. Don't forget to find us on Facebook at Coastal Stories Podcast and on Twitter at Podcast Coastal. That's at Podcast Coastal. You can buy us a pint at ko-fi.com Coastal Stories if you feel so inclined. If you're in Glasgow this weekend, that's May the 7th, 2022, you can catch me in conversation with Bobby Gillespie of Primal Scream about his memoir Tenement Kid at the Mitchell Library as part of the I Write Festival. I'll put all the necessaries in the show notes. If you're listening to this in the future, after May the 7th, 2022, then I'm sorry you missed the Bobby Gillespie thing. If you could let me know how it went before Saturday, then I can smooth out all the weird bits. Thanks. Thanks again for listening to Coastal Stories. I do really appreciate you giving up your time and your ears for these tales. If you can hit subscribe, rate and review us wherever you find your podcasts, and tell your friends, and even just passing acquaintances, that would be great, because every little helps.